You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
The haunting legends of a mighty Bigfoot have made man's blood run cold for centuries, some terrific and some terrifying. The Southern Appalachian Mountains whisper the mysteries of this strange and powerful creature through its smoky hills and ominous embrace. This is Brandon Thomas with Expanding Reality, elated to announce our very first Expanding Reality Excursions Befriending Bigfoot event. It's going to take place on a beautiful 27-acre ranch in Blairsville, Georgia, May 15th through the 20th. This intimate conference is going to feature Bigfoot adventure hikes in three different states, river kayaking, nightly presentations from such incredible presenters as Alexander Petikoff, Chris Matthew, Dave Zed, Preston Dennett, and many more. Also, we're going to be doing some UFO watching, some jam sessions, all kinds of hangouts. Visit expandingrealitypodcast.com/events for more information. That's expandingrealitypodcast.com/events. We'll see you there.
A choice right now, between fear and love. It's just a rock.
Out of the dark night of ignorance and into the shining light of truth.
Expounding reality.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking.
We don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
There's a level of reality where everything dissolves into an ocean of energy.
We empower our experience by insisting on our authenticity.
That's very profound.
Very.
Expanding reality.
Alexander Petikoff, so cool to see you, my friend. Of course, Small Town Monsters and your Bigfoot Beyond the Trail, PetikoffMedia.com, and your episode 180, where you first appeared on the show, will all be located down below. So the good news again, my friend, you're returnsies, so we can just skip to it and just say, how was your Louisiana trip? What have you been up to? You know, and you and I have some really cool announcements to make here as well, along with this conversation, but I'd like to just, catch up with you a little bit before we get to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again for having me on, man. Really appreciate it to come back. It's been, man, it's probably only been over a year, right?
It's a year. Yeah.
It feels like it's been way longer. A year, exactly. Man, it feels like it's been so much going on. As you know, we were kind of talking about before the show. Obviously, you and I are both busy. We've got a lot of stuff going on. So a year for me just feels like a really long time.
Like 10 years, yeah.
As you mentioned, I just got back from Louisiana. I was doing some filming down there, which is really awesome. I'm up here in the Northeast in New Hampshire. It's nice to get away from the cold weather a little bit, right? Getting some nice southern sunshine. We had some pretty warm days, but I was working on some Bigfoot Beyond the Trail stuff, which I guess shouldn't be a surprise, but I was also working on something really cool that I'm super excited for. Brand new series that I'm doing, and I've really only talked about it maybe once or twice publicly up until now. And we just dropped the trailer for it, but it's called Strange Places. It's a brand new documentary series that is as open-ended as it sounds. I mean, really anything can be a strange place. So the gist of it is it's a series that follows my investigations and explorations into places like abandoned locations, maybe stuff with some really interesting history, forgotten history, things that I think are just really not talked about much. We've also got mysterious regions. So you've got things like flap areas. For example, I'm working on the first episode is about the land between the lakes, which is kind of this really mysterious part of Kentucky and Tennessee that has a lot of really weird stories associated with it. Dog man, vampire cults, all kinds of really bizarre and out there kind of stuff. So it encapsulates a lot. But specifically, while I was in Louisiana, I was exploring these abandoned fortresses along the Mississippi River, nearly to the mouth of where the Mississippi comes out. And the Mississippi being one of the most historically significant rivers in the world, arguably, I mean, not just in American history, but a pivotal role in the development of the Industrial Revolution. I mean, the entire modern world. So to go to a location like that and see that there are historic fortresses that are basically abandoned. There was two in particular that really caught my attention. One called Fort Jackson, which President Andrew Jackson was the originator of, and an older fort across the river from it. So you've got Fort Jackson on one side of the Mississippi, and Fort St. Philip is the other one on the other side, which was actually a Spanish fortress. So Louisiana used to be part of the Spanish kind of control in North America, transferred over to the French. It's believed that the first ever Mardi Gras celebration took place at Fort St. Philip. And then both of these fortresses were part of multiple wars, whether it be the War of 1812, the Civil War, the American-Spanish War. And there's just a lot of really interesting history. And they're now kind of both abandoned and sort of derelict and falling apart. And I think that's really interesting. It's a piece of missing history. There's also some strange cult history in the area. There's a lot of really weird connections. As soon as I saw this location, I knew I needed to go there while visiting Louisiana. So that's for an example of something that'll be covered in a series like Strange Places. You've got stuff like the LBL, which is a lot of mysterious phenomena. Then you've got something like these forts, which are, there's just a lot going on there, whether it be kind of regular history or weirder history. So that's sort of a gist of what I've been working on lately.
It sounds incredible. So it's not out yet? We don't have a link to share yet?
No, unfortunately, okay. Well, as of recording this, February 25th, the first episode of Strange Places will be out publicly.
Okay.
So I'm literally working on that right now. That's the Land Between the Lakes one I was mentioning. So, and then it'll kind of follow in as I produce episodes and how they kind of come out a semi-monthly basis or something like that.
Well, if it's not out at release of this episode, I'll come back in and link it and then update the show description. That's awesome, dude. Well, congratulations, man. I think this is huge and amazing. And every time you go out somewhere, you come back. First of all, you go to places I've never would have thought to go, like the middle of Kentucky in between some bodies of water. Were right. you given stories to go there, or did you just sort of stumble upon the research and go, hey, or do you throw a dart at a map and just happen to be right at amazing places?
I mean, there's a little bit of that in everything. I think it's kind of coincidental, but the Land Between the Lakes is kind of in the last decade or so, especially through the internet, kind of creepypasta stories has become associated with this so-called dogman topic. Now, I'm not one that really delves into that. My primary wheelhouse has been Bigfoot stuff, as you know, maybe some other cryptids like lake monsters. So this is something that's totally out of left field for me, but with Small Town Monsters, we're doing multiple productions at the Land Between the Lakes. And my buddy Aaron Deese, who is writes books for us and is in some of our movies, he's actually working on a book about kind of this whole dogman phenomena there at the Land Between the Lakes. And I went with the intent of doing my own project, right? We go oftentimes as a group of us, Small Town Monsters, and we're all working on 3 to 4 projects at the same time. It's a really cool collaborative process, but I originally was going to do a sort of Bigfoot episode, but I found throughout some of these stories, I heard about just this area of the Land Between the Lakes, how it was seized essentially. There's a corporation called the Tennessee Valley Authority that was is federally owned. It's kind of like power and infrastructure in that Kentucky, Tennessee area. And they used eminent domain, which is a government policy, to basically steal private land from citizens and hand them over to a corporation, in this case, to the government itself. They had, it was about 800 to 1,000, maybe more families that were basically evicted off their land. some were given compensation, some did it willingly, a lot didn't, and there was a lot of holding out. So there's a lot of resentment. And then they flooded a few towns to create what essentially is the two lakes that are now surrounding this largest inland peninsula in the U.S., which is called the Land Between the Lakes. And it was run by the Tennessee Valley Authority up until the late 90s, at which point the USDA and the Forest Service took it over. I don't know how the USDA got involved, but you know, with the government, there's a lot of weirdness. And so they've essentially been running it as a recreation area. It seems like there's a lot of promises made about the development of the area as a tourist hub that haven't really come to fruition. And there's still, it's a weird place. So that's the kind of the backstory. And then you have all these other really strange stories associated with it. So my trip there, to kind of answer your question a roundabout way, was essentially I was going to mostly focus on Bigfoot / dogman type stuff, and it ended up turning into so much more. I learned about a vampire cult that apparently lurked in the area. Just a lot of other strange stuff that I figured, hey, this would be great in my new series to kind of cover this as a region, right? Because this is kind of a region that's known for this. You've also got stuff like the Bridgewater Triangle. Skinwalker Ranch is obviously a famous one, but they're sort of regionally focused. It's not maybe one specific location. So that's why with Strange Places, being able to do basically anything, I can do a specific location or take a kind of wide angle view. And I think it being so open-ended allows me to do that. But yeah, the Land Between the Lakes is definitely a strange one, because even if all the phenomena is not real, right? Let's play extreme devil's advocate. It's all just urban legend and hearsay. You still have a strange history there. And there's a lot of, as one of the interviews I did, people said it's like the bitterness and the anger soaked into the land. Imagine these people kicked off their ancestral lands that they've been living in for hundreds of years at that point. There's still plenty of family cemeteries out there in the middle of nowhere that's now, you can be walking in the middle of the forest and you come across an old cemetery plot. And it's a very strange area that just, like I said, the history is fascinating enough if you don't buy in any of the paranormal or any of the weird stuff. But I, as I typically like to do, I take a wide kind of view at a phenomena or an area and just, hey, we're going to talk about the dogman stuff. We'll talk about the weird lights, the crime aspect, the cults, and just sort of give an overview on each of those topics and talk to local researchers and people who have been out in the woods and, you know, been accosted by federal law enforcement officers and, hey, what the heck are you doing here kind of stuff, and get those stories out there. So that's kind of how I tend to look at it.
Well, it's fascinating and interesting, and especially because you are going to these places under your main calling, which was this gigantic hairy bipedal dude, right? Running around like, what the fuck is this? But now that led you to see that there are so many other things in the areas in which that occurs as well, that there's a lot of freaky woo-woo going on that seems unrelated maybe to somebody. No, it was a dog, right? Man specifically, it was big and hairy and bipedal, but its nose did this and its ears did that, not what you're describing. So it's fascinating because now you're able, like you said, to take a wide angle lens approach to this. Exactly. Strange Places is a perfect name for this, just like Expanding Reality. It's very whatever the fuck, man. It's let's talk about, right, all of it, right? But it is interesting because I just picture you getting tired of coming through these small towns asking about Bigfoot and them going, I had a UFO experience and I had a poltergeist and I, right, had a this. And you're like, no, I'm not here for that. But now you're here for all of it. And you can probably find some very interesting things that correlate in areas like that when you're gathering multiple stories, especially from a reputable source like you.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because in some of my previous Bigfoot documentaries, you know, we did one, for example, on the Bridgewater Triangle, which is considered to be one of the most kind of haunted urban legend sort of areas in the whole U.S., really, North America. You've got the Freetown Forest, which is supposedly the most haunted place. You can't talk about an area like that without talking about the other phenomena, right? There's legitimate cult activity, horrific murders. I mean, we interviewed a Freetown police detective who was on scene for just some gruesome murders that, you know, this might not have anything to do with Bigfoot or ghosts or anything. Just a completely demented human thing that's happened. But you can't talk about this kind of weird area without mentioning that. So I kind of had a basis for that before, but with this series, I can kind of really expand on just even more without having so much of a focus on the Bigfoot. And I did get a little burned out. I mean, you know, I was up in Alaska all summer practically doing Bigfoot stuff, which was incredible, don't get me wrong, but I'd always wanted to kind of expand a little bit into some other topics. So I think this gives me creatively a little bit of a balance, but also, as I mentioned, because of how open-ended it is, I can focus on something that might not even have anything to do with weird or paranormal things. Just, hey, look at these weird forts along the Mississippi that are basically rotting. They look like an Indiana Jones movie set. And there are some of the most pivotal, examples in American history where if these two fortresses were not there, the Union Army wouldn't have conquered New Orleans in the Civil War, or the War of 1812 wouldn't have stopped the British. I mean, and now it's just kind of rotting and forgotten. That's that forgotten history element of it. And as a history nerd myself, it's kind of cool to be able to dive into those and just do so many other possibilities, even abandoned locations. Just how cool is that, right? You find these places that are also a part of that forgotten history. Why have people left this place? Why is it just falling apart? What's the history behind it?
So interesting. I'm going to talk to you about your fascination with history and the area in which you're researching, because I have a lot of questions for you on that. But I do want to know more about these vampire cults. So, I mean, is this people with fake teeth and or what's this look like?
Very strange. And it's kind of up for debate whether or not it's directly tied to the Land Between the Lakes. But while I was there, I was teamed up with some friends of mine that they're kind of a paranormal Bigfoot cryptid research duo out of South Carolina called Hellbent Holler, Joe and Jesse Doyle. They're great people. I've talked to them quite a bit in the past because there's not a lot of people who really truly get out in the woods and get their hands dirty sort of thing and go into those deep, hard to reach places. And there are people that do. And we've always traded ideas about gear. That's kind of how we started talking was, hey, what tripod are you guys using? Oh, this works really good. Oh, this chest rig is really great for storing gear. That's kind of how it got started. So I was down there with them and they said, hey, you want to go to the vampire castle? I said, I mean, what kind of question is that? Obviously, who doesn't want to go to something like that, right?
Let's go.
So they took me to it was basically just like it was a really beautiful area. We were walking up this bluff and you've got a bridge on either side of the Land Between the Lakes that connects it to either part of Kentucky. And these lakes are more like rivers. They're basically rivers that were flooded. So we're on the left side of it, kind of towards, so that'd be Western Kentucky. And it was sun was going down. It was beautiful. And they said, we're going to this vampire castle. And it's really just a house foundation is all that's left. Supposedly it was someone's vacation home, and as many of the places in the LBL, you just find abandoned homes and structures throughout middle of nowhere, because this all used to be people's homes and properties that through that government seizure has just the land has reclaimed it. They've demolished part of it. Right. So a lot of these places become hangouts for rather unsavory characters. And this vampire hotel supposedly was where a group of people who thought they were vampires would go and hang out and possibly do rituals. Now it gets really weirder. There's I don't remember the name of the town. There's a small city kind of to the southwest of this location of the LBL. And there was a guy named Rod Farrell, who was, if you look at a picture of him, he's a really creepy looking guy. Apparently, he thought he was the reincarnation of like a 500-year-old vampire named Visago or something, Latin sounding, very creepy, kind of strange guy. There's actually a whole, I think, HBO special on him I watched a couple months ago. I think it was HBO. It was from the late 90s, early 2000s. But he basically felt he was this reincarnated kind of ancient vampire. And he would go and do these rituals in the LBL and some of his cohorts. Well, he ended up actually going to Florida and killing two people and then was put into jail. And there's a whole interview that was done with him of, I think, one of the investigators who was looking into him did a sit down interview with him. And he talks about, hey, I genuinely felt like I was possessed to be this vampire. I mean, really, really creepy kind of stuff. But that's the story. After that murder, that series of murders happened down in Florida, people started going to this castle in the LBL, or what they call a castle, really just an old house, and it had vampire hotel graffitied on it. And then I guess it was the Park Service probably at that point, or the Forest Service. They actually demolished part of the castle. They just thought it was attracting negative attention. So that's the genesis of that story. It was something I'd never heard about until I was there. And they said, hey, you want to go to the vampire castle? So that I figured was warranted enough of a kind of a little segment on its own to put into my broader documentary about the LBL, because whether or not they actually did any rituals, I mean, the murders took place in Florida, not related to the LBL, but it still has the story has its genesis in that area. So I thought, hey, this would be worthy for a little kind of investigating.
So many questions with this, because then speculatively, right? I mean, you could say that there was a bunch of haunting in the area before they flooded it, and maybe that's why they decided to flood it, right? Maybe there was a bunch of crazy stuff going there, and they're like, we got to get people out of here. and move everyone off. Now, that's an altruistic way to look at something that probably was a land seizure, but let's just say for shits and gigs.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, not to interrupt you, but there's a lot of really weird stories associated with the LBL. I mean, I've heard, when I was there, even somebody said, well, they flooded it so they could keep these dogman creatures encapsulated in these rivers. And there's just, you know, and that's part of the exploration of it too, with strange places is, again, if you don't believe in any of this stuff, you know, I've got people that I know that are extreme skeptics, and I want to create something that they can at least be like, oh, that's interesting. You know, why, even if this stuff is not real, why are people going to these places and thinking they're seeing things, or why are these stories associated with these places? Why, you know, not every patch of woods or a strange forest has this amount of weirdness going on. So why is that the case? So I think there's a little bit of everything for everybody within something like this.
Yeah, it makes it a legit strange place. I mean, that's fascinating. And just like you were talking about, because of the history, but also because of the characters it attracts. And so, again, it is sort of this ideal that maybe they are being fucking possessed, man. Maybe they are. It is sort of a possession thing, because when you talk about murders in the area and there was all this stuff that went on, plus Dogman and Freaky Woo Woo, it's like, well, maybe that escalated in tandem. You know, it is the same thing, and it just resonates within people differently. Sort of like Wi-Fi frequencies and shit. They'd fuck with people differently. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so in this way also, maybe people were being manipulated by some freaky woo-woo and being inhabited at a level. And especially if you're seeing Dogman, you're already scared sort of the area. That may make you open to possession. And maybe that's Dogman's purpose, is he hops out to get you so low in a state of whatever that they're able to go, gotcha, and hop in. And then now it will manifest in the humans, where before it was just whispers in the forest, you know?
See, now that's so creepy. And that's stuff that I wonder about when I go to these places, because again, you know, whether or not you believe in it, I think is irrelevant, because something is going on, whether it's in our minds or not. There is some reason that this is going on. And I don't know if I'd want to know the answer, to be honest with you. I mean, there's some of that creepy stuff, especially the hauntings. But just, you know, the way I can investigate is I sort of, when I'm on location in a place, I take it for what it is. If something happens, it happens. If not, you know, the mystery kind of continues. But is there an answer to this stuff? I don't know. I mean, will we ever solve it? Probably not in the way we think about it in a 21st century physical touch, see, feel, smell kind of sense. Maybe this is beyond our understanding at the moment, or maybe it's all in the human mind. And that just is a testament of how powerful our minds are, that we have created all this stuff. I don't know. This is, again, kind of how you get the marble sort of rolling sort of kind of thing. And it just, you go down a lot of different rabbit holes. And that's what I like about this is, you know, I'm not really tied to one thing specifically, because I can have something totally crazy happen that derails my entire planned investigation and just roll with it.
That's what I love about you. And I've talked about you in this way on the show and many times on other guest appearances when you come up. I'm like, dude, the guy's heart is in it. I love how objective you are with it, but how you really take a great skeptical look, although it's skeptical, right? You want it to be something, you just want it to be excited for the right reasons. And I find that very admirable, man. I get it.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, totally. Okay, well, cool. I wanted to ask you about possession in the area, because when you mentioned it earlier, it just sounded like that maybe the strange places can affect men that are there, you know, in the same way the Dogman is there, whatever. Maybe you just see Dogman there because of the place itself and the effect it has on your DNA, maybe.
Well, that's, again, it's like you could go to a random piece of woods and not have anything strange happen. But why is it that this particular area over others has these similar types of stories? I mean, that's, I think, just when you get into the whole kind of flap areas, triangle areas, window areas, whatever sort of discussion, where is that delineating mark? Is it into the realm of urban legend, where people go seeking these experiences, but then, you know, most of the sightings seem to come from people that were there hunting or just not wanting anything to do with anything weird? Which, it does it prey upon people who just are not interested in anything strange, and then those who go in search of it have nothing happen? It's kind of just interesting to try to wrap your mind around it. And again, I don't know if we'll ever have the real answers, but I think it's still worth investigating, because if you just sit at home and don't look into it, you know, you're not going to really get a feel for this sort of stuff. And that's the process of discovery. Like I said, when I went down originally to the LBL, I had a pretty narrow view of what I knew about the area, which was, you know, it's known for Dogman sightings. There's some Bigfoot stuff, but you hear about all this other stuff. You hear about really bizarre government policies, no firearms allowed in this area. And for a state like Kentucky and Tennessee being extremely pro-firearm, and there's no good reason. No one can figure it out. They try to get Congress people involved. You know, the Park Service or the Forest Service is really shifty about some of the rules there. Why is this going on, right? I mean, that could be totally mundane, but also I think it adds fuel to the conspiracies that are around such a place, right? I don't think that they're doing themselves any favors by being sort of shifty about some of this stuff. So that's, again, part of that process of discovery of me going down there and not really having a little bit of a basis, but not knowing at all about stuff like vampire cults and other weirdness that's going on in the area.
That's so wild. And it is interesting to think, like you said, about city ordinances and things like this, like maybe dry counties and stuff, to where, yes, it's a dry county. But if you think about it, maybe they only made the county dry because there's no freaky woo woo going on there. And really what they need you to do is drive to the other counties, inevitably, which those people will do to seek that. And then they get their pickups there and then literally bring the spirits back with them inhabiting. You know, it's all this wild stuff to where it's these hoops that get danced through where you think you're subverting something, but really you're being led into it. Naturally, like a cattle through a chute. It's like, oh, I took a left there. It's like, yeah, that's the only way you could take, dude. You know, we all took lefts there. And so it's just interesting when you start putting this into the area itself and how it may be sort of an energetic hub for something, or maybe a beast itself that just consumes the free will of man in a way, you know, and in all ways it manifests these crazy things so it can get its way, which is its job. It's wild. It's sort of these realms of these little pockets of destabilization throughout the realm to make sure that we have an interesting time here.
Well, it's very weird, too, because like specifically a place like the Land Between Lakes, prior to it even existing, when it was just sort of an area between two rivers, I believe it was used to be called the area between two rivers, the land between two rivers, because you had rivers instead of now what are lakes. I mean, 30 miles from there, 30 miles east of there, or there, maybe a little bit less than that, is Kelly/Hopkinsville, Kentucky, which is home to, I think it was in the late 50s, the Hopkinsville Goblin incident, which is probably one of the most famous UFO cases ever. So it's not like this stuff is new in the area. And not that far from there is Adams, Tennessee, where you have the Bell Witch, which is kind of, and the Bell Witch Cave, which is really like less than an hour, I think, drive from, if you're on the Kentucky side or the eastern side of the LBL. That's an area that's the Bell Witch is this kind of infamous story in American history where it's almost, I wouldn't say it's on the level of the Salem witch trials, but it's this strange possession, weird witch story. And it's associated with this cave thing. And Small Town Monsters previously did a documentary. I wasn't involved in that, but they did one about the Bell Witch. And, you know, people that work there in that cave still talk about strange things happening to this day. So it's like these areas, and this is kind of all part of that broader Appalachia region, I suppose, where there's just a long history of really weird stuff, all those mines, all those caves, just a very bizarre region. I mean, I live in the northern part of the Appalachians. We don't have as many caves, and I don't think it's nearly as weird in terms of the variety of stories. Yes, we do have a lot of weirdness, the Betty Barney Hill stuff, Bigfoot, the Bridgewater Triangle up here, but down there, it seems like really tied in with those mountains and those mines and a lot of the strangeness going on there. So, you know, whether or not it's tangible, I don't know, but it's darn sure fascinating to look into. Even again, I mean, I know people that are strictly looking at this from like a sociological perspective. And they're like, you know, how does this folklore form? How do these stories of goblins descending from UFOs and families getting into shootouts with them, how does that spark up? Like, that is a fascinating endeavor unto itself. So there's a lot there. There's a lot to unpack, I suppose.
So much to unpack, man. And great segue here. I guess we'll go ahead and talk about our announcement here that you are going to be with us and speaking at the Expanding Reality Excursion event that we're having in Blairsville, Georgia, May 15th through the 20th. Guys, check the link below to find out how to join us for that. Very excited, man. This is going to be awesome. We get to go walk around in those very woods you were just speaking about with you, Dave Baccaro, Chris Matthew, a few others. It's going to be amazing. And this is the area. And, you know, I wanted to ask you about the caves, and because we did a little scout trip out there to go check the place out that we are going to be at. You're going to love this, dude. It's a 25-acre place. It butts up to the National Forest right there, Cherokee National Forest. And we have run of the whole place. It's insanely cool. So, yeah, while we were out there, you can feel this, man. And we went down to the OC River up in Tennessee, actually, because we're going to do a hike in a different state because we're right there in North Georgia. So we have a couple of hikes planned in a couple of different states. And so we went up to the OC River and you could see this mining and this mist and this the way that the land is, you could see how shit could just be right in front of you and you not even see it, man. I get how something like this could survive that long and could just blend the fuck in or just take a step and just be completely out of your vision. It's right. Amazing, like remarkably beautiful and disorienting all at the same time. It's just a really cool area.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's that southern end of the Appalachians, essentially, is that kind of North Georgia region. I've been a little bit up there. We got rained out when we were up there a couple of years ago. It was brutal. But I mean, you drive into some of those hills and the hollers, and you know, we were investigating a location where there was a Bigfoot sighting, and this thing went pretty much straight up the side of a hill. And I'm like, you want to try doing that and running up it? You know, you're not doing that as a person without tumbling down and breaking your ass open. So it's an interesting area, definitely. I mean, you've got a lot of just strange stories, but the Bigfoot stuff in that region in particular, I find fascinating because it's a habitat that basically connects all the way up to where I'm at here in New Hampshire. And you've got the Appalachian Trail, right? People start their you know, what is it, 1,200 mile journey? They start it right there in, I forget the name of the mountain in Georgia, but it's not that far from this location. So super cool area, beautiful, obviously, that time of year too. It'll be really nice. I think before it gets super humid and warm, that'll be a good time for sure.
Yeah, we're doing it on a sliver moon. We have some evening sky watching planned for some UFOs because apparently it's an incredibly high everything activity area. And so Lester Rand's going to be out there filming and stuff, and we're going to check out the skies out there as well, because it's dark skies out there too. So it's this whole thing, and we're doing it around new moon, I think a week after. So it'll be a sliver. So we have a really great view of the sky. It'll be very dark out there. And then we have Dave Bacara coming out from the Bigfoot Museum right down the road with a DNA lab. He has the largest amount of casts in his collection. You know, the guy, you're the reason we connected. He's going to come out and also take us on these trails.
It's a great museum too. So people just visiting, just passing through there, definitely a good place to check out. It's just the exhibits are really well done.
I'm going to link it below. You guys come check it out. It's part of our event. So we are actually going to go check that out. So you can come with us in May, or if you're just in the area or passing through, definitely go see Dave. This place
field trip to the museum.
Awesome. It's so cool. Yeah. And we had a call with him. He said that's like double. He has another museum he's opening. He can't wait to, because he has twice the amount of stuff that he has displayed there. He was like, dude, it's crazy. But we're very excited about it. So
yeah, he had some really interesting stuff. Just to add on a story, when I was there, really remarkable story. I was there with a couple of friends of mine. We were filming some stuff, and we came across this exhibit about the Himalayas and the expeditions in the 50s to go look for the Yeti. And there were these journals and things. We're like, oh my God, they went into a lot of detail. Tom Slick, you know, he was this millionaire who funded multiple expeditions to go look for Bigfoot and Yeti back in the 50s and the 60s. So, man, these journals are so detailed. They did such a good job of recreating them. And we asked him, you know, how'd you guys do that? It was painstaking. He's like, oh, that's his original journal. What are you talking about? He's like, yeah, I mean, they apparently I don't know if they were grandkids or somebody in his family was basically tossing out a bunch of this old stuff and said, hey, this might be a value to somebody. And they ended up calling him at the Bigfoot Museum and like, hey, we're going to throw this stuff out. Do you want it? Like, sit, hold the phone. Yes, that is extremely historical, awesome stuff, especially if you're, you know, a Bigfoot history nerd. It's a big deal. So yeah, that just goes to show you the painstaking level of stuff some of these people that, you know, run like a Bigfoot Museum go to preserve that history.
It's such a cool place. The dude is awesome. The area is incredibly magical. You just feel it in the area. And there's holly trees everywhere, which is, of course, Druid. That's what they made, you know, Hollywood's named after, is because they made wands out of that stuff. So there's just magic in the area. You can feel it. And there was like no wind. It rained, but it was gorgeous. Like, it wasn't like here. Anyway, it was just beautiful. We can't wait to go back. So we're very excited about that. Link down below, guys. Check us out or email us at expandingrealityexcursions@gmail.com. Come hang out with us. This is first many, but we are very excited. Okay, so I wanted to come back to what we were talking about here and ask you actually about the history of the area that you were looking at. So have you gotten as far as the Tartaria and maybe that we're living in 1,000 years past Jesus and Armageddon's already happened and all that stuff? How far, where are you at with your history research?
So not that much about that kind of stuff. I just sort of take it as it is, so to speak. And I try to connect dots when I find something interesting about, let's say, you know, this area in South Louisiana, just talking about these abandoned forts. And, you know, I'll find a place like that. I'll say, OK, this is interesting, but let's do a deep dive. You know, what is the history of the area? Why? How long has it been settled? That sort of thing. I haven't gotten into too much of like the biblical stuff or anything. But, you know, I'm always, if I find something that leads me down that road, you know, hey, it's worth mentioning. It's worth looking into.
Well, it's fascinating you talk about the Mississippi, because that area, the Mississippi, is allegedly the Nile. And right, whenever ancient texts were written, the brief history of this, man, is basically that when ancient texts were written, we were at a pole difference. Okay, so everything that text-wise says east went to the lands of the whatever, invert it. Okay, so when you do that, you actually end up over here as the promised land. All right, So United States then becomes this amazing mecca of history. There are pyramids all over this place. The G.E. Kincaid story about going into the Grand Canyon and finding that cave. Have you heard this with all the mummified remains, and it had Buddha statues and hieroglyphs on the wall and all that stuff?
Don't know if I've heard that one, but I recently read about a story in Illinois about supposedly bases of pyramids that were there that they believe were even larger, I want to say, than the one. I don't know if it's not larger than the one in Mexico City, but larger than some of the actual pyramids in Giza and that sort of thing. And it was just these foundations, and they were massive. And it's like in Illinois, of all places, you wouldn't really expect that. But, with the mounds and everything, there's been a lot. I've looked a little bit into that. I've been to places like Serpent Mound in Ohio and some of these really kind of older, stranger cultures that maybe there's not a lot known about. I'm also really interested in you mentioned the Southwest, the Grand Canyon, but you've got supposedly the Anasazi and some of those cliff dwellings, and you get into a lot of that sort of stuff. I'd love to go explore some of those places. The Southwest has probably some of the most mystical, weird energy anywhere that I've been to. I'm sure you probably, as somebody who's been there, can attest to that. I mean, it's just, you just feel like there's a lot of history there. There is. I mean, there's no way there isn't. There is evidence of these old cultures that we don't even know about there.
It's
that
wild.
Just disappeared, supposedly.
And it's interesting whenever you factor in that, Memphis, Tennessee, a lot of things over here are named after Egyptian names or Mesopotamian names. There's also allegedly some Israel action going on over in Utah, which is why the Mormons are there and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
It's fascinating when you really look at this, and then the Moors being here first. And again, the history, and when you really dive into it, but to think that what they're talking about when they talk about Niles and these great civilization, it was actually, the Mississippi River. And then also to think about all the massive pyramids that have just been consumed by the jungles in South America, just not that far down the road, right? As it goes.
Is that kind of the stuff in the Amazon?
Yeah. That they're finding with LIDAR and all that. Massive pyramids. And even in Bosnia, they have pyramids way bigger than Giza. Those are just the ones they left.
I've heard about the Bosnia ones. Yeah. I haven't looked into it. Being originally from Southeast Europe, Serbia, Croatia, I've always heard about the Bosnian pyramids. I haven't really looked into it, but I've just heard some of the stuff that Graham Hancock has talked about with South America, and some of those, whatever was going on in the Amazon, which is with the lands, I think what you mentioned with the LIDAR stuff.
Yeah.
Just a lot. Seems like there's a lot going on.
It's a lot going on. And then when you think about how many, America has the most man-made lakes, by a factor of, I don't know how much, out of any other country. And then exactly to what you said about flooding out an area and buying out the homes, maybe they do this with temples and with cave entrances to inner earth and with things like that, with establishments here that they just couldn't blow up and dynamite out of the way. So they just flooded it out and then made a lake, right? Hey, you're welcome, guys. It's fascinating when you think that history can literally be just right below your feet like that. That would just change everything.
I think people don't expect a lot of that from the US because of it being a younger
country.
That's why
it's so perfect.
Right. I mean, yes, you have examples of, other countries, but there's more of a layering. I know where my mom's from in Croatia, they can't even build a parking lot without digging into some ancient Roman ruins that nobody knew was there. They just start digging and suddenly it's a protected site. People don't really expect that from the US. So something like 1700s, 1600s up here in New England, that's considered old, but that really pales in comparison to stuff in Europe or Asia or other places, Africa, whatever. So it's an interesting concept to think that, man, there's actually a lot of stuff we don't know about in the Americas. I understand a lot of the kind of first people that lived here sort of stuff has been, I don't know if it was the Clovis theory or one of these theories that they sort of are going back on. They think they're finding new evidence of people living in the Americas older and older, right? And even the ice bridge theory is supposedly on its way out from what I understand. And this is super basic knowledge of that. But people saying, well, no, there were other people that maybe got here before then, even that the ancestors of the Native Americans were here long before we think they were here. So it's fascinating. I mean, because you talk to some of these people and, you know, I had a chance to talk to some of these Native cultures up in Alaska and British Columbia and places like that. And they talk about, yeah, you know, we've been here a lot longer sort of thing than people maybe acknowledge publicly. So that's, I guess that's part of that process of discovery, right?
Definitely. And maybe it's a lens in which you view this place through. We walk around and you're like, maybe this is ancient Egypt. You know, maybe there's some really cool shit just right there. And this whole mud flood idea, have you heard it or looked into this idea, Tataria mud flood, like this history that's been literally covered over, maybe because of a cycle, maybe deliberately?
I don't know if I'm familiar with that specifically, but I do know about like the supposedly the ancient floods that happened. And this is stuff that I've heard Graham Hancock talk about. That's kind of my only source on some of that, the Sphinx supposedly has evidence of acid rain. I don't know how verified or not that is, but that's been postulated by Graham, which would indicate obviously it's a lot older than previously thought. And it takes you down some really interesting rabbit holes just in terms of, well, our history is a lot longer maybe than we were even taught or explained. I'm not saying maybe there is a nefarious connection to it. I don't know. But it kind of just makes you wonder, yeah, maybe there's a lot more to it than just this sort of time period. But I think people, as we are now, we're so in the moment, right? People are always looking ahead to the future. I think a lot of people just don't care as much about the past, but the people who do are extremely passionate about it. Like myself as a history nerd and others, you know, you obviously are very interested in what's been going on for thousands of years, tens of thousands of years beforehand. Whereas I think a lot of people nowadays aren't. And I think social media and everything that's destroying our attention spans and keeping us just, you know, one click, one reel or short or whatever, that's holding your attention. I can't believe, like, what really trips me out nowadays is, I mean, you have like something right here, right? A cell phone that it's more advanced than what they would have used 50, 60 years ago to, you know, run nukes, right? Like the technology was more simple than it is now. You can access everything. So you can basically learn about almost anything you want, but people are almost more disenfranchised or more unwilling to do their own research or even dig into these interesting topics. And I don't know if that's because there's too much information or people are just being dumbed down. I really don't know, but I think it's just, it's a completely crazy juxtaposition. It's almost, I mean, I get overwhelmed at times because you start researching a topic and then you jump down into all these different areas and you're like, I just need to take a step back for a minute and reconvene because, and so I understand some people maybe see that and they're like, yeah, I'm not even going to bother. But what a way to live. I couldn't imagine that because as somebody who's too curious about things, you know, you end up going down a lot of different paths. And I think that's just all part of kind of being inquisitive and having access to information now is in a way that has never been previously.
You end up so Bigfoot beyond the trail that you're just off into strange places, man. Now, you know,
that's what happens. Yeah.
And what's next, right? And that's the thing, though, is you're willing to expand. That's the whole point, man. You follow it where it goes and you follow your curiosity where that goes. And that's just such a cool thing. So if you don't mind, give some people inspiring words about that. What is it like to follow your curiosity and to really do what you love?
I mean, it's a blessing, obviously. I'm thankful for it every day to be able to do something that I'm able to kind of just, not on a whim, but I don't have anyone telling me you have to do this or you have to do that. I have this sort of independence, which is just remarkable. I don't think a lot of people get that opportunity, which is a shame, but especially if you're kind of stuck in something you don't like doing. But I don't know. It's a blessing and a curse in some ways to follow your curiosity because sometimes too many of them compound on top of one another. So you'll end up, you know, I'm doing a project on this, but then I'm already researching 2-3 months in advance for things I'd like to do. I'm looking at the abandoned Pennsylvania Turnpike, these abandoned tunnels. And now it takes me down this hole. And I'm like, I really want to go there now, but hey, I still mentally have to be in the land between the lakes. Right. But I've already mentally moved on to a different place that I'm deep dive researching. So you have to try to find a balance. So I don't want to say ADHD because I think that's super generic and overused because I think it's just, maybe a lot of people have it, but it seems like, I mean, it's just, I think overused, but I do have a tendency to kind of just go be have a, I mean, my tabs just on like what I'm searching. There's way too much going on there. And it's like, okay, I got to keep this open because I've got this thread going here, and trying to keep everything organized. It's kind of a, it's a bit of a wild process, I guess, to put it lightly.
I'm going to pop in and say the ADHD, which I have as well, which you do as well, which, yes, this is how this works, is overused, under alchemized. And one of the biggest things is you do this in a right, in an appropriate way for the way that your mind and body and structure work, is that you work on multiple things at once, because spinning plates to you is nothing. It's actually the fuel that keeps you going. You need multiple projects, because yes, you can burn out on one. Right. You have so much bright, creative light, energy, and insight that you will fry that thing because you look at it too long. And it's sort of like holding your magnifying glass over what you love, but the sun's going to burn it if it's there for
too
long.
Right, that's a great analogy.
You've got to fucking float it around. Again, it's the alchemy, but knowing that within yourself, man, is beautiful. Have you found a time of the month where you find that you're very introspective? Do you have your time of the month? Have you located one yet?
Not really. I'd say probably more towards like the end of the month. I'd say I'm more, that's when there's kind of a lot. I don't know if that has to do with, I'm looking at superficial things like deadlines, and maybe that's kind of influencing it a little bit. I do typically tend to, I don't want to say procrastinate, but I do work a little bit better under pressure, perhaps. You know, if I have way too much time to do something, I will typically end up doing 10 other things that are not necessarily going to help me in the moment. But yeah, I don't know if that answers the question or not.
It does.
But,
it does. That's called Parkinson's Law. It's that whatever amount of time you give a project is how much time it will take to complete it. So this is why you can fuck off on a paper your entire, you know, month that you had to work on it, and then the night before bang it out and get like an A. You know what I mean?
That was definitely what I did when I was in school.
Exactly. Of course. Cause you know, our minds work very similarly, but this, I don't think is a bad thing. I used to find it to be limiting, but now I find it to be that I'm learning how to alchemize it as a superpower.
Right. Yeah. Just utilizing. I think that's the key. I think a lot of people get lost in that. And I'm sure you've probably seen this, people that just, and I think what I meant by the overuse of ADHD, I think everyone just, I don't know if that's just a societal thing where, you know, you go to school, you're kind of, it's all, and I'm somebody that struggled with traditional learning. So I was kind of always struggling with that really traditional learning path, really bad at standardized testing kind of thing. I had a little bit of an alternative way of learning. My parents, I was lucky enough to have some that realized that, and kind of try to find outlets for me. But I think society tries to mold you in a certain direction. It's just the obedience kind of thing. You know, you're seen as an economic unit, I think, nowadays, largely, unfortunately. Whether or not, you know, that's a good thing or a bad thing, that's up for debate. But I think just trying to throw everyone into, it's like a square peg in a round mold kind of thing.
Yes.
Just, it doesn't work for everybody. People are obviously going to, it might work for a majority, but there's always going to be outliers. So I don't know how to find a balance with that, but I think just ADHD and all that, you know, kind of stuff is easy to blame and say, oh, this is why this person is inefficient, because their mind races. But if you look at some of these very successful people, I think it's all about how to utilize that, how to use that. You know, your mind can't sit still kind of thing. People just say, hey, take medication for it, right? Why do they give it to kids who are like that? I mean, I'm a kid of the 90s, and my parents always refused to put me on, you know, the Ritalin, all that other stuff that normal, you know, functioning kids were being put on, just because they were curious and active. And that's what kids are supposed to be. But we live in this day and age where, especially 10, 15 years ago, that was a bad thing, right? People, and it's like you're suppressing that and just trying to churn out something that's so, I don't want to say sterile, but kind of
unauthentic. Just,
yeah. And it's you're trying to suppress something. And I think that's what, like, especially us as creatives, you know, better than most, we just have different ways of dealing with things and different ways of looking at things. So what works for you might not work for me. That's the creative madness. It can't be replicated. There's just a uniqueness to it.
That's what's so beautiful, because you can't be replicated. Neither can the way somebody does something exactly like you. It won't be the same. It just doesn't have your flair. You know, it doesn't have your, it doesn't have the Alexander.
That's the scary thing about AI. It's like
it isn't. I don't know.
There's two sides to it, right? I just see, you know, when I'm looking at it, like from a Bigfoot research angle, AI is going to basically make it impossible to really trust anything you ever see online again, right? But I've used AI to help with projects. It's like all with all these new technologies. I mean, we've grown up kind of on the internet, right? Imagine 50, 60 years ago, people Yeah, this is way too fast. This is, you know, and we've moved so quickly just in the last 100 years, more than we have really in most of human history, at least that we know of, right? In terms of technological progress and just how quickly things have changed. So we've had to adapt really quickly. And now it's going to be interesting seeing these generations that grow up with AI, especially as AI continues to go into all these different facets of our lives and so many different areas. There's a good and a bad. I mean, it's like the guy who invented dynamite, right? Who regretted it at the end of his life because he knew it was going to be used for bad purposes. There's always a good intention, but I don't know if that's just us as humans. We misuse that sort of thing. But, you know, I have some reservations about some of this AI stuff just based on kind of what I've already seen. And some people are just not ready for that kind of thing. Some people are, some people aren't. I mean, that's the march of technology and that progression. And, you know, if like you look at Nikola Tesla, somebody I'm really interested in, you know, and not only was he Serbian, I've been to like the place where he was born, you know, his family home, which is now part of modern day Croatia, is a really interesting figure. And just some of the stuff he was into and, you know, the idea of all that free electricity, free all this stuff and how it was so shut down at the time by, I don't know, the powers that be, but you've got stuff like Edison and, you know, it's just not profitable to kind of try to go down that route, I suppose. And, you know, this is turning into a little bit of a ramble, I think, on my part, just kind of, I don't know where I'm going with this, but you see stuff like Nikola Tesla as somebody that's very inspirational to me. And I kind of look at that and I say, well, he was definitely ahead of his time. I think a lot of people would say that, you know, maybe there's other people that are ahead of their time now, but we don't really know where this technology is going to lead us essentially in the moment, if that makes sense.
It does. And I think that we're in a world now where maybe those people who are inventing those things will stop just getting killed, you know, and we can have the hydro cars that are coming out. We hear people making in their garages that they're like, hey, yeah, my neighbor could just do that for you. Oh, he died. It's one of these wild times where I think that you nailed it earlier with the peg square hole deal. But I think that what's occurring now is that the pegs are rigid and that the hole is what's becoming flexible and spongy and malleable. So we are finally these rigid pegs, if you will, that just aren't going to go with the bullshit square model anymore.
Yeah, I think especially with the internet, I mean, the cat went out of the bag, right? And you can say what you want about the internet and always ruin things too. Like I said, I think as somebody that's, as you know, as a media creator, content creator, attention spans, these sorts of, there's a lot of negative consequences, but also there's a lot of positive consequences. I mean, how much people have connected and certain topics have come to light and things that maybe never would have been talked about previously that you just wouldn't have had access to. I mean, it's like the printing press, but in a more modern sense, right? It's, you can actually access it for yourself. You don't have to go through a middleman. And yes, there are attempts to obviously tamper down the internet. I mean, I remember 10, 15 years ago, it was practically Wild West compared to today, because there's a lot of, I think, powers, whatever they may be, that do try to clamp down the internet. I mean, just looking at a place like YouTube, right? I'm not saying anything good or bad in this aspect. I'm saying YouTube used to be a crazy, freaking wild ass place, right? And now it's like, well, now we've got to cater certain content to certain audiences. Well, this is not good. Oh, we want to talk about firearms. No, that's not good stuff. We got to start banning these people. So there's like a little bit of a weirdness there with kind of that, how to control information, but with the internet, ultimately you can't. I mean, I don't think you, yes, you can try to, but there's no going back really.
Putting the toothpaste back in the tube, you know?
Yeah. It's like, good luck, right? You can try, but might be futile. People always find a way around it. And that's like that. I don't know if it's really anarchy. Maybe it is, but it's that kind of, it's like a chaos. I think that's a good thing because it allows just people to connect that never would have had the chance to before, but also share ideas that, you know, a lot of people probably wouldn't want them to share.
An anarchist would say what we have now is the chaos. It's actually leaderless. It's just representationless. You don't need somebody to represent your God-given rights, which is what an anarchist really wants to talk about. That's it. It's just, hey, do you want to do what you want to do? Cool. Are you going to infringe on anybody else's sovereignty, meaning their sovereignty to property, their sovereignty to life, their sovereignty to safety? You not scaring the shit out of them, taking their shit, right? Are you going to do all that?
Right.
Cool. Then go live your life. I don't need to tell you to wear a seatbelt or not, dude. Just enjoy. Yeah, drive as fast as you want. Just be careful, you know? Be mindful you live in a place, right? It's this over-governance that creates the chaos, I think, that we find now, because what it really does is in exactly what your mode of operandus is your ability to spin plates and to see that, but also not to judge yourself for the way you operate and to try and fit yourself into that peg. And you're actually grateful that that is over there and that you don't identify with needing to do that. That's right. The beauty, because you acknowledge your authenticity. I think what this place creates is a great opportunity for you just to stamp that out, but it's constantly bubbling up. And so this is where this dissonance comes in, is denying that authenticity. It's like what we talked about. If you were to sit there and just focus on a project, I know you've done it, I know I've done it. You burn out on that thing. The project ends up sucking. I'll work on an audio thing for like hours and then come back. It's garbage. I'm like, what the
And what have I done? Yeah.
Right. And so we see this now as, instead of maybe, again, a hindrance, but an opportunity to alchemize. In the same way, it asserts our authority. And in the same way, then you can truly look around and say, especially as a content creator, man, I know that you've shunned this long ago with your authenticity because you're able to speak it. It's that whole, like, the comparison curse is dead within me, man. I'm not trying to do what somebody else is trying to do.
Right.
I'm not following some plan of, hey, you got to post X amount of. None of that shit. I'm doing my thing and I'm having a blast doing it. People end up liking it. Cool. It's all good, you know, but it's my thing. And so I don't have to compromise me to do what I love, you know. And even in that, there's a lot of compromise that you're offered the opportunity to do, especially when it comes to your dreams and shit, especially if you want to make it quick. They're like, hey, if you compromise a little bit here, you can have what you want now. It's like, no, it's,
yeah,
what would you rather
the easy path is not. Yeah, the easy path comes with a lot of maybe consequences or stipulations, right? It takes you a long time to get where you want to go. I think that's part of the reward of it, right? It's like, it's not just going to happen instant. And we live in this instant gratification kind of world where I think people expect that. And a lot of people are maybe, depressed or sad or jealous or angry because they see other people doing this stuff. And it's like, well, I mean, they probably didn't have an easy path to that point, right? I mean, I didn't have that. You know, if I think back 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago from now, I was miserable. You know, I was commuting to a job I hated. And I was like, I can't do this, you know? And my side passion was doing these documentaries, doing this Bigfoot stuff, all this other weird stuff. I'm like, that's where I want to be. And I know it wasn't going to happen overnight. I got there eventually, but that's what I tell people when they ask, like, oh, well, you know, what's it like now? Like, tell you, man, it was not easy. There was points where I'm like, I cannot do this anymore. I mean, this is, I either have to dedicate into one or the other. And it's not an easy path to take. And people like I don't want to say familiarity, but they like the comfort of it. You know, hey, this is not something outside my comfort zone. They're not taking a big risk. You're going all in on what you're passionate about, because that sometimes doesn't work out for people, right? I mean, I've seen it happen, unfortunately. I know this might not last forever, right? But I'm riding the wave now. Where it goes, I don't know. But that's kind of part of the journey, right? It's part of the experience.
It'll probably dump you somewhere awesome is our experience in this too, right? Because you've gone this far. You're this far out of land. Like, I'm not going back. I don't know about you.
No,
I'm not trying to be reinserted into the matrix.
It's tough to get back. Right, right, exactly.
It was one of those things. And when I quit my job as well, same thing, about 2.5 years ago, I said, fuck this, dude. I'm absolutely done. And I was driving around in my little Bud Light car and selling beer and shit. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. And so the only thing I knew with certainty that I would never be okay with myself if I didn't. And that was it. It wasn't things are going to work and universe is going to catch you and take that leap of faith. I knew you have none of those certainties at all. The only certainty I was absolutely certain of is that, dude, you're going to be so pissed at yourself if you don't. And
exactly.
So that's, and you only have two people to impress in this place, the 85-year-old you and the 5-year-old you. And it's something you said earlier as well, but the unknown, man, I just read in a book recently called Repeatlessness by Joe Marsala. Highly recommended if anybody wants to check it out. Repeatlessness.com, I think, is his website. Anyway, in there, he was talking about that a guru told him that really it's not the fear of the unknown that you're scared of, because you need to have something to compare to be scared of, right? You need to have an angry bobcat to a cuddly one to know the difference. So let's say that your fear of the unknown is actually your certain fear of leaving the known. That's what it all comes down to. You're certain of the fact that you're scared of leaving the known. That's what the fear is. That's it. And so when you can really frame it that way and you can step into something and say, actually, I'm not as scared of the unknown. I'm not as scared of anything. Let's fucking do this. And I'm more scared of staying in the known. And it's that part, man. That's where that was my catapult, dude.
And that's the part you're going to beat yourself up about, is the not making that leap, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's being stuck in that place, because you'll just spend another 4 years miserable and saying, this sucks. Sure, the money's okay. It's great. But you know, that's not, that is not everything. You know, a lot of people obviously do live in that kind of mindset, but you know, you and I clearly are not, that's not the primary focus. There's obviously the journeys, the experiences for me are some of the most rewarding stuff. I mean, that's stuff I get to tell, you know, hopefully my grandkids one day, you know, crazy adventures, right? That's, and maybe that's how I grew up a little bit, as I grew up with these stories. My parents, they took a leap, right? They were born into this communist country that started falling apart in a civil war, and their options were basically, you know, stay there, deal with the chaos, or go to South Africa. And that's where I was born. I, growing up, I heard these stories about them taking this leap there and go visiting all these amazing places, seeing all this incredible wildlife, all this stuff, and then having to go from there to the US and that sort of thing. So I think that in my case with my upbringing definitely said, well, my parents, they went from, you know, most unfamiliar places, just jumped right into it. They had no backing, nothing. They just kind of went into it. So I think it kind of made sense for me that I don't want to say as scared, but I know that it's, you know, whatever happens, it's going to happen, right? What's the worst that can happen? You get your ass kicked, you go back, start again, right? I mean, that's the trial and error process. But yeah, no, I really enjoy talking about this kind of stuff with you, just because it's cool to relate to somebody that's taken that leap. And I know a lot of people now are, and I know people that have, and I'm lucky enough to work with this incredible group of people at Small Town Monsters. We're all kind of in the same boat. We're all people that are in this creative space, and it's a really cool collaborative thing, but we all are able to do kind of our own things, right? Like I've got my own stuff going on, but then we can come together and collaborate. And we've created something that allows us to do what we want to do with the content we create and all the other things we get to do. So yeah, it's been nothing short of a blessing, absolutely, on taking that leap, for sure.
It'll continue to be so, my friend. That's just the thing. You and I are going to go hang out in May. I mean, this is the first
time. I was just going to say, I'm super excited for that. Is it technically a summit? Are we calling it a summit?
Or event. Are we calling it? It's our Befriending Bigfoot event. It's our Expanding Reality excursions. We're getting
excursion. I love that excursion.
Yeah, we're it's getting out from the computers, man. Yeah, we're still going to do this and stuff. And we're going to have 2-hour presentation blocks every night that are going to be streamed on YouTube every night. So if you're not able to go, you will be able to see what we're up to, but you definitely want to come out. We've got like camping available. It's a whole range of things. So,
oh yeah. Just getting that time, getting out in the woods.
Yeah.
That's something that's so needed, especially nowadays. I mean, I live in the woods now, so it's easy for me to just go outside and take some fresh air in. But it's so necessary because, as you said, like the matrix, you know, everyone's plugged in. We've got multiple screens around us at any time. It's crucial to get out of that for at least a little bit.
You got to, especially guys like minds like ours, right? You work on a project, go outside. Now, what's nice about this is a lot of your focused projects are fucking outside, man. And you're outside for like months at a time, immersed in this beautifully, creatively conducive environment.
Right. That's it. That honestly for me has been incredible. I mean, previously I did video work that was like, I would do weddings, stuff like that. Like that is just I would never want to do another wedding again. Like not even my own, right?
What
like
song have you crossed off your list that you'll never listen to again
doing weddings? The Beatles, Here Comes the Sun. Is that the Beatles? Here comes the sun. Every time I hear that song, I have like a PTSD effect from it. But you know, dealing with couples, and I have nothing, you know, obviously everyone wants to make sure their special day, but that was like something that I did all this stuff back then, video work, and I'd work for production companies as like a PA. I worked on like a Gus Van Sant film I worked with Matthew McConaughey's stunt double. I did all this stuff before, and I'm like, this is not what I want to do. Like, I found that to be boring. It's a lot of sitting around. You know, making like a feature narrative film takes so long. And I have respect for people that do it. I know people that work in that and they love it. That's their thing. I'm like, I could not do that anymore. Right. That is not my cup of tea, but it's cool because you get that experience and you realize, okay, this is more what I'd like to go into. But being able to go out in the woods and do this stuff and just be in nature. Like I was up in Alaska for a month back in the summer. I drove up there. Like that was a trip I've always wanted to do, probably one of the most amazing drives I've ever done in my life. Driving from the East Coast all the way to Alaska, just seeing everything in between. I went up with my brother on the drive up. So that was like a really awesome experience together, and with my fiance on the way back. So it was like, I had two trips coming back and forth. They were both unique, especially with the people I was with, but they were different, you know, in the sense that just being in these locations and you see some of the most wild territory that exists in the world. in northern Canada and in the Yukon and in Alaska, and then being able to make, man, I think I did a whole series up there, and then I had three or four Bigfoot Beyond the Trail documentaries, and the most recent one just came out. And it's just so rewarding to just be able to showcase these places that I was there. Because you forget, you know, it's been 6 months since I got back and I'm editing a film, like, wow, I got all this footage, like I was there. And then you remember those memories, you're like, okay, yeah, this is exactly why I love doing this stuff.
What a great occupation, because now you're constantly immersed in nature. Because, you know, a lot of people will sit there, and some people have the habit of going back to a memory that sucked, and they'll stay there and then bring those emotions to their now, and then that's what affects their day, or colors their day, rather.
Right.
But you get to immerse yourself back in that feeling of being in the most amazing place ever, back here on dry land when you're in your studio editing.
Yeah, it's like you get to go mentally back to those places.
Yeah.
And, you know, for example, you know, I'm in the Land Between the Lakes now mentally. And that was just something I went in November. It was like right the day after Halloween, I remember, because we did like a haunted house at my parents' house. You know, we did like a little Halloween haunted garage with my brother. You know, it was a lot of fun. The next day I was in the LBL looking into dogmen and vampire cults.
Yeah.
Like how it was a cool continuation. But now I'm mentally back in that place. Whereas if you talked to me 2 weeks ago, I was on the Kenai Peninsula of Alaska talking about the Port Chatham Bigfoot, you know, famous story kind of thing, because I was so immersed in that. And that's why I love my little studio here with my mountain backdrop, kind of gets me back into that, yeah, that woodsy sort of feeling, and helps me stay into that kind of that creative process that I have, at least.
I love it, man. It's absolutely fascinating. Well, I'll tell you what, brother, we're going to wrap it up for now, but we are going to hang on for an afterthought. And if you guys want to join us for these afterthoughts, the hangouts, all the bonus content and stuff, check the link down below. That's how you can do this. As well, Alexander here is probably going to come over and hang out with us for a hangout. Those are so much fun, dude. It's a wild party, and definitely check it out down in the show description, guys. But before we let you go this time, brother, all the ways, of course, to find you again will be linked down below. Your episode 180, your first appearance on the show, your PetticoffMedia.com, your small town monsters, everything, man. You're just crushing it. And we just love you and love seeing what you're doing and where you're going next. And I can't wait for Papa Petticoff. You know, I see a painting of you like with a musket, with a Bigfoot. You guys are buddies, you know, over your family hearth, you know, and your grandkids sitting there telling stories about your adventures and shit. But for now, my friend, what gets you out of bed every morning? What keeps you moving forward and trugging along?
Ooh, a lot of things. I mean, I'd say primarily adventure, right? That's, I think I was just born to be an adventure. And that's something that, you know, obviously people I love, all that stuff is the primary, but the adventure is like that fire that I cannot extinguish. I'm always thinking about it, you know, whether or not I'm actually thinking about it, I'm always thinking about, I'm going here, I'm going to get into this place.
The haunting legends of a mighty Bigfoot have made man's blood run cold for centuries, some terrific and some terrifying. The Southern Appalachian Mountains whisper the mysteries of this strange and powerful creature through its smoky hills and ominous embrace. This is Brandon Thomas with Expanding Reality, elated to announce our very first Expanding Reality Excursions Befriending Bigfoot event. It's going to take place on a beautiful 27-acre ranch in Blairsville, Georgia, May 15th through the 20th. This intimate conference is going to feature Bigfoot adventure hikes in three different states, river kayaking, nightly presentations from such incredible presenters as Alexander Petticoff, Chris Matthew, Dave Zed, Preston Dennett, and many more. Also, we're going to be doing some UFO watching, some jam sessions, all kinds of hangouts. Visit expandingrealitypodcast.com/events for more information. That's expandingrealitypodcast.com/events. We'll see you there.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.